Before it was signed into law by President George H.W. Bush, on this date, July 26, 1990, some liberals and conservatives alike were critical of the Americans with Disabilities Act. It's The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. And at the time, disability rights advocate Mary Johnson called it a relatively painless way for the Republican Party to woo a new constituency, while Susan Mendel, writing in the National Review, warned that it would be, quote, the most disruptive piece of civil rights legislation in our history. So how do you see the ADA? Or do you see it at all in your everyday? Join our conversation this hour at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, an email available anytime. Ideas at WPR.org. Monica Murphy's a managing attorney with Disability Rights Wisconsin, representing and advocating people with disabilities individually as well as within systems and public policy. Monica, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
I think the last time we spoke with you was just before the pandemic, wasn't it? And I'm, you know, I've seen the stories. The pandemic's been easy, hasn't been easy for any of us. It's certainly been a struggle, but at the same time, it's been a much different story for people with disabilities. Can we just go back to catch up a little bit and lay bare what the pandemic has exposed about people with disabilities and dealing through this COVID-19 pandemic?
Sure. Well, the pandemic, like everything I under the ADA, I always say the answer is it depends. in the pandemic had some benefits, frankly, to people with disabilities in terms of things that have become more available, such as telework and telehealth. On the other hand, we did see discrimination against people with disabilities. We saw policies that made them lower down the echelon when it came time for who was going to get the vaccines first or who was less likely to get care if we were going to have situations. You know, it seems a distant memory now, but certainly the whole period of time where there was a shortage of ventilators and things like that, there were different places that were making policies that people with significant disabilities were lower in the ranking on getting those ventilators under the premise that their lives weren't worth as much. So
well, they weren't as likely to survive, I believe, was the general equation at the time or something to that matter. But it went to the heart of how people with disabilities were seen in the bigger context of surviving a pandemic. Yeah.
Correct. Right.
Did we see any modifications to the Americans with Disabilities Act, any evolution of the ADA in the last few years as a result of the pandemic, Monica?
Well, not to the law itself, I don't think, but certainly in terms of how accommodations and things like that are viewed. For example, I mentioned telehealth. So, you know, pre-pandemic, there was not a lot of telehealth visits that were covered by insurance or covered by Medicaid and things like that. And when the pandemic hit and it became clear that the best way to serve a lot of people was remotely, it became much more widely accepted and it became much more widely available. And that certainly was a benefit to people with disabilities, especially to the extent, A, that they were more vulnerable and needed to stay home more than people who didn't have those vulnerabilities, and B, because it made things more accessible to them that even pandemic or not were less accessible if they had mobility impairments or they had other disability-related needs to not leave their homes. Telehealth certainly became much more available to them. So that's something that was kind of an unexpected benefit, if you will, of the pandemic.
So let's bring ourselves down to today. Monica Murphy, managing attorney with Disability Rights Wisconsin. And where do some of the gaps and opportunities remain common as you see them, Monica?
Well, you know, 32 years in and we still have lots of issues with employment for people with disabilities. They're still one of the largest unemployed groups, even in this economy where we're hearing about how hard it is to fill jobs. People with disabilities still have a much higher unemployment rate than other groups. There's still, I get calls virtually every day from people who are having difficulties getting reasonable accommodations on the job or feel like they're being discriminated against because of their disabilities on the job. So that's certainly an area where there's still plenty of room for improvement.
And how do you go about that improvement? What's the pragmatic steps you take to address the unemployment gap for people with disabilities?
Well, on an individual basis, we certainly try and help people find the proper accommodations, get the things they need, educate employers on their obligations and what's available to help them find the appropriate accommodations for people. On a broader level, we work on state policies to promote the employment of people with disabilities, to limit or hopefully eradicate the use of the subminimum wage for people with disabilities. We try and promote competitive integrated employment for people with disabilities, encourage the state to contract to provide jobs for people with disabilities. So there's different ways of going at it, but certainly still, as I said, 32 years in, there still is a certain amount of public awareness or lack of public awareness about the employment of people with disabilities.
Monica Murphy, our guest, managing attorney with Disability Rights Wisconsin. And if you have a question on this, the anniversary of the signing of the ADA, you're welcome to join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. How does Wisconsin fare, Monica? How do we compare to the rest of the states when protecting people with disabilities?
I don't have any scientific data on this, but I think we do reasonably well. We have a pretty strong state law as well. The Wisconsin Fair Employment Act protects the rights of people with disabilities in the workplace, in some ways even better than the Americans with Disabilities Act does. So on that level, I think we do pretty well. Our public accommodations law is not so good as the ADA. Public accommodations are places that are open to the public and their obligations to not discriminate against people with disabilities. So on that score, we're not so good because we don't require reasonable accommodations or reasonable modifications in our public accommodations law, if that's not too much of a tongue twister. I think on a whole, we do reasonably well.
And how would you assess Wisconsin employers and their ability to comply with the ADA? How do we do here? In your experience?
Boy, it's all over the map.
Okay.
Some are great. You know, some have really gone out of their way to hire and support people with disabilities. Others, not so much. Wisconsin was the home of last year, what I believe to be a record verdict against an employer, in this case, Walmart, $125 million verdict against Walmart for disability discrimination.
Wait, and can you put yourself in employer's shoes and understand why you know people with disabilities would be an asset to the organization, or why some employers would be concerned about taking on a person with a disability?
I think part of the hesitation on the part of employers is fear of the unknown. They think certain things, or they have misconceptions about what it means to have an employee with disabilities. It's going to be harder to work with them, or it's going to cost them more, or things like that. When in reality, studies show that people with disabilities are actually some of the best employees. They have good attendance records. It doesn't affect the employer's costs, things like that. They also, employers are nervous about the costs of accommodations. And again, studies have shown that most accommodations have no cost to them. And beyond that, many accommodations can be provided for less than $500. So, and there are also some supports that might be available to help cover the costs if accommodations are more expensive, like the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation can help sometimes with accommodation costs if necessary.
Our guest is Monica Murphy, managing attorney with Disability Rights Wisconsin, and this is the anniversary of the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act, and it is part of the stories that we are hearing this morning in our news. So what do we have, what can we say about 32 years of the ADA, and what can we say about what's next. Join our conversation with your questions, your comments, and your experiences. 1-800-642-1234. A conversation with Monica Murphy continues. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Last year, about 19% of people with disabilities were employed. Less than one in five. That, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, this is the anniversary of the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act 32 years ago today. We're taking a look back and a look ahead with our guest, Monica Murphy, managing attorney with Disability Rights Wisconsin. And she is taking your questions this morning as well at 1-800-642-1234, or your stories of your experiences with people with disabilities, employment struggles, just what you've seen in accessibility in Wisconsin. And before we go back to our guest, Monica, let's take your call now and go to Brad in Madison. Brad, good morning. You're on with Monica Murphy from Disability Rights Wisconsin.
Yeah, good morning. I'm listening in, interested in the program topic this morning, and just thought I would call in. I work for a clubhouse program called Yahara House. It's a part of Journey, Mental Health Center in Madison. We work with adults with serious mental illness, and one of the ways that we match people with jobs is through a program called Transitional Employment. So Yahara House has relationships with employers in the community, and we learn a particular job, and then we hire folks within our clubhouse to go and work that job for 6 to 9 months. And we also provide coverage for the employer. If the person who is working that job is not able to be there for any reason, then our staff will go in and cover that job. So it offers incentives to the employer in that they don't ever have to hire for that position. They don't have to train for that position, and guaranteed coverage. And as Monica said earlier, too, people with disabilities, in my experience and over 30 years in the field, really do make excellent employees. They tend to be very appreciative of the jobs that they have, show up on time, work to get better at their jobs and so forth. And just the last thing I guess I'll say is the employment rate, about 19%. We're closer to 50% with the people in our program. So I think the transitional employment has a lot to do with it. Sometimes people work a couple, few transitional jobs, and then they're ready for competitive employment, and then they just check in for less regular support.
And Brad, what do these businesses that are working with Yahara House say about this relationship?
You know, it's beneficial for their employees because, you know, there is a lot of stigma about working with people with mental illness, and you know, you find that people with mental illness are people first, someone that also has a mental illness diagnosis. But and then, you know, the in a tight job market, or where there's a lot of turnover, they're not experiencing the turnover that they might otherwise have. And, you know, we tend to have long term relationships with employers that are beneficial to everyone.
Brad, I appreciate your perspective so much, as well as your story about the work at the Yahara House in Madison. Thank you so much. And Monica Murphy, what do you hear in Brad's work there? And then how do you compare it to that 19% figure that we see from the Bureau of Labor Statistics?
Well, I think you asked me earlier about ways to increase employment for people with disabilities, and certainly Brad's program is an excellent example of that. There are lots of different creative ideas for increasing the employment of people with disabilities, including, you know, things that we have seen develop since the passage of the ADA that didn't really happen very much prior to that, including having job coaches for people while they learn a new job, or to check in on them in an ongoing job and be a liaison between the employee and the employer. Trial work periods for people, other kinds of supports, the supports that Brad was talking about. all those things make a difference and help to promote the employment of people with disabilities.
So under the ADA, an employer is required to make a reasonable accommodation to a known disability of a qualified applicant or an employee. What's considered reasonable under those terms?
As I mentioned earlier, the answer to everything under the ADA is it depends. Clearly, it depends on the resources of the employer. It depends on what kind of modifications need to be made. Is it something minor? Is it something major? An employer doesn't have to provide an accommodation that would be an undue burden, whether it's an undue financial burden or an undue administrative burden, nor do they have to provide an accommodation that would be a fundamental alteration of how they do the work. A simple example of that I often use is if somebody works on an assembly line and they're dependent on the person before them and the person after them is dependent on their work, it might be a fundamental alteration to allow somebody to take a half hour break off that assembly line if it's going to slow down the whole assembly line. Mm-hmm.
Monica Murphy, Managing Attorney with Disability Rights Wisconsin, want to invite you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. As I understand it, the Americans with Disabilities Act prohibits discrimination on the basis of disability in employment, but that requirement only covers employers with 15 or more employees. From your perspective, Monica Murphy, what's your take on that? And what is the Disability Rights Wisconsin doing to advocate for some voluntary compliance?
Well, you asked me previously about how we're doing here in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And the great thing about the Wisconsin Fair Employment Act is that it covers all employers. Employers who have only one employee are covered by the Wisconsin Fair Employment Act. So that 15-person threshold is less of an issue for us here in Wisconsin because people who are discriminated against by smaller employers have a remedy through the Wisconsin Fair Employment Act.
You mentioned telework as one of the silver linings of the pandemic for people with disabilities, that it made it accessibility easier for employment. But now some employers are returning folks to the offices and their cubicles and their cubbies and back to work physically. And I'd be interested in the reaction from you, Monica, and what this means for accessibility for people with disabilities.
Well, if, believe me, we're getting the calls.
Yeah.
from people who have been working remotely and want to stay working remotely because of issues related to their disability and the employer wants them back in the office. I think the experience with telework has made it a lot easier for people to work remotely than we saw pre-pandemic. Pre-pandemic employers were like, oh, we could never do that. We don't have the equipment. It'll never work. Well, now they have the experience of having the equipment. You know, how many of us learned how to use Zoom in the last 2 or 3 years?
Well, some of us are still learning.
Yes, okay. Well, me too, but, yeah. But you know, I'm slow with technology. And so a lot of employers are much more willing to consider telework than they had in the past. I think a lot of employers are doing hybrid kind of work schedules. And I think that benefits people with disabilities quite a bit if they have a disability that can fatigue or things like that. It isn't going to be available in all workplaces, and certainly employers may have reasons why they really need people in the office. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, who enforces the ADA, has some guidance on telework, and that's kind of informative in terms of what factors to look at as to whether or not telework is reasonable for a position or not. But I really do think it is kind of a silver lining of the pandemic in that it's a much more real possibility than it was 3 or 4 years ago.
Does the ADA or Wisconsin statutes provide any protection for employees who want to work remotely or need to continue working remotely?
Well, it can be considered a reasonable accommodation. So if you have a disability-related need to work remotely, it's not I want to work remotely because it's easier for me. You really have to have a disability related need, and it has to be feasible to do for an employer. There's some jobs you can't do remotely.
Sure.
You know, we saw that all during the pandemic with the positions that were considered essential. But I think it's broadened the field. It's not going to make it, it can be a reasonable accommodation, and it depends on the job and on the type of work and on the particular needs of the individual. There really has to be a disability related need.
Monica Murphy, an advocate for people with disabilities, working with Disability Rights Wisconsin and taking your questions this hour and sharing your stories as well. 1-800-642-1234. Ed, hang in there. We'll get to you after the news and continue our conversation with Monica Murphy. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Today is the anniversary of the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act. It was July 26, 1990, signed by then President George H.W. Bush. Also this morning, you will see that the stories of accessibility are in our news locally in Wisconsin, with just something as simple as access to our democracy and the lawsuit. We'll get to that, but first I want to get to you. Our guest this hour is Monica Murphy. It's The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent. Monica Murphy's managing attorney at Disability Rights Wisconsin, and she's taking your questions this morning, and we're sharing your stories as well at 1-800-642-1234. You can always email us, ideas@wpr.org. And before we get back to our guest, let's go to Ed, who's in northern Wisconsin this morning. Ed, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How's everybody?
All right. What do you have for us?
Well, I signed up for disability in August of last year. I've got some amputations going on, and I got some with the diabetes I got going on, I got some really bad neuropathy, so I have no feeling in my feet, and I have no balance. So I look pretty funny just walking, but with the amputations on the hands, I'm always trying to use my forearms and stuff. And I applied for disability back in August of last year, where I was told it was a 3 to 5 month wait. And then after the 5 months, I was told 6 to 8. And then after the 8 months, I was told 10 to 12. And now here it is almost a year later.
And you're still waiting.
Absolutely.
How are you getting by?
It was, borrowing from friends and family. And I tell you what, they're all getting sick of me. You know, this has been a really long process. I've been living in my car since last June. It was a really hard winter living in my car. I got frostbite a couple of times. I mean, it wasn't fun.
Geez, Ed, listen, they're not sick of you. They're just as frustrated as you are with the system and how slow it has been to serve. And I want to thank you for sharing your story. And I certainly want to go to our guest here and find out from Disability Rights Wisconsin whether Ed's story is unique and what Ed can do from here. Monica?
Unfortunately, it is not unique.
Oh.
We have really been seeing issues with sort of chaos at Social Security. And I'm assuming he's talking about applying for Social Security disability.
Mm-hmm.
They are really backlogged. They are understaffed, as I understand it. And we are seeing a lot of problems with people getting approved for benefits and the length of time that it takes. I don't know if you've been involved with your local disability benefits specialists. Every county has a disability benefits specialist that can help you navigate the system. And if it gets to a certain point, that disability benefits specialist might elevate it to, we have attorneys here at Disability Rights Wisconsin who help people with getting their disability benefits if it goes to hearing. So that's something that has to come through the disability benefits specialist in the counties, but unfortunately, what Ed has experienced is not particularly unusual.
So if it's not unusual, then Ed's story is not alone. And I thank you so much for sharing it, Ed, because perhaps it could help others. And so what steps will Ed take and others like him who are facing this long, drawn-out wait with Social Security disability? Is it contacting their county? What steps do they take?
Well, I think they should contact their disability benefits specialist in the county. Those people are housed in what's called the Aging and Disability Resource Center. So if you look for the phone number for the Aging and Disability Resource Center, you can get connected with a disability benefits specialist. I would not hesitate, though, to call your congressman or your senator, because they're the ones who can have some influence on Social Security and what's happening with Social Security staffing and things like that. They need to know the problems, and oftentimes they can be helpful in moving things along. So don't be shy about that either.
Ed, thank you so much for the call. I wish you all the best. Now, to the story that we've heard in the news over these last couple of days, the lawsuit that was filed, federal lawsuit filed on Friday, warning that some voters have been told they may not be able to legally cast their ballots. And so this lawsuit was filed against the Wisconsin Elections Commission and its administrator, Megan Wolf, because they allegedly told voters that no one else is allowed to help them mail their completed ballot. So the commission's finding is evidently the Wisconsin Elections Commission's finding is brand new for this election and comes directly from the 4-3 state Supreme Court decision earlier this month that bans all ballot drop boxes in Wisconsin. So what's a paralyzed Wisconsin voter supposed to do? It sounds so confusing, Monica Murphy, that it seems like it would take an attorney to suss it out for us. What do we know?
Unfortunately, it is confusing. But what the Teagan decision, the Wisconsin Supreme Court decision that you just referenced, does not do and cannot do is overrule the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Federal Voting Rights Act. And voters with disabilities have rights under both of those laws.
And they supersede anything in Wisconsin.
Right. Okay. And the Teagan case didn't say that voters couldn't have accommodations.
Yeah, that was an interpretation, wasn't it? Or
right,
reading between the lines, or trying to actually protect potential voters from what could be litigation after casting a ballot?
Yeah, it was unfortunate the way that came out. But people still have their rights to have reasonable accommodations, and those reasonable accommodations include the assistance of someone to help cast a ballot, as long as that person isn't your boss, your union representative, or the candidate. So people can still get assistance. We are putting together some guidance for people in terms of what they can do. We encourage people who do absentee balloting to vote and mail in their absentee ballot as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. If it becomes a situation where there isn't time for the ballot to get there in time and they need assistance with someone else delivering their ballot, we are recommending that they have a letter asking for a reasonable accommodation to the clerk. We'll be posting, I'm not sure if it's up yet, on our website, a sample letter that people could use.
Okay.
That says, you know, I'm a voter with a disability, and I am asking for this reasonable accommodation for assistance in delivering my ballot. Like I said, both the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Voting Rights Act require elections officials to provide reasonable accommodations to voters with disabilities. So that hasn't changed.
Okay.
It just, as you said, it's very confusing at the moment with some of the information that's out there and the things that are being said that people don't understand. And I think a lot of people are frustrated and feeling disenfranchised.
Well, it sounded like this federal lawsuit, which was filed by 4 Wisconsin voters with disabilities, is intended to create some clarity with voting, but may access to the ballot box, but may have confused the issue a little bit more. I mean,
well, it shouldn't have. I mean, they shouldn't have to have filed it.
Right.
But and maybe ultimately it will just sort of reinforce what I am saying, mm-hmm. is that people continue to have rights to accommodations under the ADA and the Voting Rights Act.
Well, and along with some of the silver linings of the pandemic for people with disabilities, telehealth, telework, but also the opportunity, a greater opportunity to cast your ballot than just at the your polling place on election day with the ballot boxes that were put in place with the absentee voting, no reason absentee voting. But what does this mean for the accessibility of the ballot box for people with disabilities in the big picture here in Wisconsin, Monica?
Well, I think the biggest hindrance is the perception, which is not to say that there are definitely people who will be disenfranchised by these rulings and not be able to vote. But I think if people understand their rights and ask for the accommodations, we are going to be sending out a letter to all the elections clerks in Wisconsin reinforcing this and reminding them of their obligations to accommodate voters with disabilities.
So let me just reiterate here, because we're 2 weeks away to the day from our August primary, August 9th. And so for those who would need assistance with getting a ballot in the mail, or for those who would need assistance getting a ballot to the clerk's office, they can still get that assistance. And Disability Rights Wisconsin would have a form letter or a example letter that would be able to provide for those who would be delivering ballots to the clerk themselves.
Yes.
All right. And of course, we'd put the link up to Disability Rights Wisconsin on our page at WPR.org/mornings, and you will find it there.
Okay. And another place to find information is the Disability Vote Coalition.
Disability Vote Coalition.
Right. And that's disabilityvote.org is the website. Okay. And there too will be information about people's rights. In addition, we host a hotline on election day. So if you do run into problems, we can get involved in trying to solve them in real time. That is an 800 number, 844-347-8683.
That number again, that's please?
844-347-8683, which is 844-DIS-VOTE.
844-DIS-VOTE. And again, disabilityvote.org and the phone number will be available at WPR.org/morning. So you'll be able to find it there anytime you need it. And it seems like a resource, but what is happening to accessibility of our democracy? Is this something isolated to Wisconsin? Is there a bigger picture afoot here as you see it, Monica Murphy?
I think it's especially bad what we're experiencing right now in Wisconsin. We're not alone. However, I'm hazy on the details, but there was a recent case that went the other way.
Oh.
Jefferson County. Oh, I'm drawing a blank on where it was. One of the southern states where they were trying to invoke some of these rules that would affect people with disabilities voting, and the court shot them down. So there is movements in some places all around the country that to limit voting and limit access to voting. And of course, anytime you do that, you're limiting access to voting by people with disabilities. And sometimes people with disabilities are disproportionately impacted by them, such as voter ID laws, where they don't always have driver's licenses or other kinds of identification that other people might have. Or sometimes it's, you know, these ballot box issues. I do want to say, though, in Wisconsin, we still have what we call the motor voter. If you can get a ride to the polls, the poll workers can come out to your car and give you a ballot and stay there and have you fill out the ballot. We still have that right in Wisconsin. So if you can get to the polls, you are still able to vote, even if you can't get inside the polls.
Thank you.
But
for
again,
that. Yeah.
There are limitations, and some of these limitations that are being provided all over the country have a disproportionate impact on people with disabilities.
Monica Murphy, our guest, managing attorney at Disability Rights Wisconsin. And your final chance to join our conversation this hour as we look back on 32 years of the Americans with Disabilities Act and looked ahead for accessibility for all. 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Our conversation concludes with Monica Murphy next. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. July is Disability Pride Month. This is The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and today is also the anniversary of the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act, and we've been looking back and looking ahead this hour. And, you know, it's a look where we've seen barriers and opportunities since the pandemic, and the future offers both causes for concern and some causes for celebration, which is just another way of saying that the work for advocating for accessibility goes on. And in case you haven't noticed, this hour continues to touch all of us in one way or another. Our guest, Monica Murphy, managing attorney with Disability Rights Wisconsin, and your last chance to join our conversation with your questions and your experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. One of the aspects of accessibility we have not touched on yet this morning, Monica, is schools. A report from the U.S. Government Accountability Office found about two-thirds of school districts had buildings that may be difficult for people with disabilities to access. What do you see in Wisconsin when it comes to our public schools?
A variety. Mm-hmm. Certainly, again, this might be a silver lining of the pandemic in terms of those funds that school districts got, those one-time funds mm-hmm. that were part of the pandemic stimulus. Many of the schools are using that to update their physical plants. And in doing so, they are increasing accessibility. So that I guess, is another silver lining of the pandemic in terms of improving access for people with disabilities. Again, you know, there's a wide variety in some smaller school districts that have a lot of older buildings. There continues to be access problems. The schools aren't required to have every building in their school district accessible. They need to offer access within their system. So if a school district, for example, has three elementary schools, if one of them is accessible, they've met the minimum requirements. So your child who needs an accessible school may not be able to go to their neighborhood school because that's not the accessible one in their district. And again, if this is older buildings, things built after the passage of the ADA do need to be made accessible from the get-go.
And what about transportation? How's Wisconsin doing when it comes to providing accessible city transportation or in rural areas?
Well, that's another. It depends. Certainly, the cities that have bus service are required to have accessible bus service or have a parallel paratransit system. And for the most part, that's working reasonably well. It is something that has improved over the life of the ADA or in the years that I've been working on these cases. You know, many years ago, we had filed a lawsuit against Milwaukee County because of the problems with their paratransit system. But it has definitely improved over the years. Rural areas remain a problem for people with disabilities. If you don't drive, it can be very difficult. Uber and Lyft have certainly made things easier for some people with disabilities. Many of those services don't necessarily offer accessible transportation. So like Lyft vans mm-hmm. or things like that for somebody who uses a wheelchair may not be available. They do in some places, but certainly in rural areas, they don't necessarily offer those things.
I saw a story in the New York Times last week about a settlement with the U.S. Department of Justice and Uber. The ride-sharing company was accused of violating the ADA because they were charging extra for people with disabilities onboarding into their vehicles. Did you check out this lawsuit, and what was your takeaway from it?
Well, I think it's great.
Okay.
The settlement's great. Not that they had to bring a lawsuit, but I think it's great that the settlement is great. Uber has recognized that they need to accommodate people with disabilities, that it may take somebody with a disability a little bit longer to get on board if they have to navigate out of their home and get onto the vehicle. And so Uber has agreed to not only not charge those fees, but to credit people who may have been charged them in the past. So there is a settlement amount of
a
couple million dollars anyways.
Oh, okay. I thought it was more than that.
Let me just see. Multi-million dollar. Yeah, I think it's about $2.25 million. Refund some of these fees and to change their practices moving forward in terms of people who have disabilities can sign up for their service and they won't be charged for these late or long onboarding times. So it does make the service much more accessible to people with disabilities, and that's a good thing.
We got time for one more question here. Kenneth joins us from Beloit. Kenneth, good morning. You're on the air with Monica Murphy.
Good morning. I heard it a long time ago that people over the age of 65 are considered disabled. Is that a fact or not?
Not in and of itself. The interesting thing about the protected class of being a person with disability is that almost all of us will get there eventually. But it's not... it's not you turn 65 and you're disabled. So there's some very vigorous people who are well into their 80s who wouldn't be considered disabled. So
I'm glad
it's not automatic.
I'm glad we could clarify that. Thank you, Kenneth. And Monica Murphy, the work to accessibility continues. So what's on your agenda? What are your top priorities? What do you want to see furthered in Wisconsin?
Well, obviously, this voting issues are really a hot topic and a big concern. We really would like to make sure that the polling places are as accessible as possible to people. We continue our work participating in accessibility audits. So on election day, you may see someone walking around your polling place with a little clipboard doing an audit to make sure that your polling place is accessible. And we get involved in that every election. So that's an issue that continues. The employment of people with disabilities, again, there's still so much work to be done. You know, you cited the 19% employment number, and that's atrocious and sad. And so we continue to work to improve those numbers. Those are probably our biggest issues, but, you know, there's plenty of issues out there and plenty of work to be done. But we are also want to celebrate, take this time to celebrate for the improvements that have been made. If you look at just I think the greatest success of the ADA has been access to the environment. If you're old enough as I am to remember pre-ADA, when we didn't have curb cuts, when every restroom you went into didn't have an accessible stall, when, you know, there weren't grab bars and there weren't, navigable ways through buildings. There really have been some tremendous improvements thanks to the ADA in our physical environment. And we just need to keep doing a little more work to make everything accessible for all.
Monica Murphy, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
It's been a pleasure.
Monica Murphy, Managing Attorney with Disability Rights Wisconsin. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.